Welcome back to Gold Ribbon Conversations, the podcast created to support families fighting childhood cancer in Ireland. 6 children, adolescents and young adults are diagnosed with cancer every week in Ireland. And the Gold Ribbon, which illuminates precious light, love, courage and compassion, is a symbol of strength and solidarity for each and every one. My name is Sinead O'Moore, and it is my privilege to bring you this podcast on behalf of Childhood Cancer Ireland, a charity founded by and led by parents of children with cancer and survivors who know that one of the greatest sources of strength for this fight is conversation. Throughout this podcast, I talk to families impacted by childhood cancer, as well as the experts who care for our children's health, education and happiness. Yes, we talk about the fear and the pain, but we also talk about the hope and the friendship and the community that exists here, because you are not alone. Childhood Cancer Ireland values every single donation while on its mission to help more children, adolescents and young adults survive cancer and thrive as adults, and support all those dealing with the long-term effects of illness and trauma. This episode discusses the loss of a child to cancer. While this conversation is essential for families who have experienced this grief, it may be understandably upsetting, and so we encourage you to protect your emotional well-being. You'll find a link to Anam Cara Bereavement Support for Parents in the show notes. September marks Childhood Cancer Awareness Month and is also a poignant month for this week's guest, Evelyn Neary, whose son Cian was diagnosed in September 2018 and passed away in September 2019. Cian's life and legacy has inspired an incredible story and an incredible charity, Cian's Kennels. Evelyn started Cian's Kennels after Cian passed away. They enable families to bring their pets to kennels at CHI at Crumlin so that sick children can see their pet. Cian's long stays in Crumlin were hard, as a teenager away from friends and normal life, but his dog Cooper brought him much needed company and compassion. But there was nowhere to kennel Cooper. After Cian passed away, Evelyn started working on the idea, and they now have approximately 40 volunteers. This is an amazing story with nothing like Cian's Kennels anywhere in the world. Evelyn, thank you so much for joining me on this very special episode of Gold Ribbon Conversations. We record this today in September at the beginning of Childhood Cancer Awareness Month, and quite a poignant day for you and your family as well. Thank you for joining me and telling us this incredible story.
Thank you, Sinead. I'm delighted to be here talking to you today. It's one of those days that I suppose people often talk about their lives before a day and their lives after a day. So if we as a family were ever to have that conversation, it would definitely be before the 4th of September 2018 and after the 4th of September 2018. So that was the day that they told us that Cian had a very rare form of lymphoma. He was after spending about 2 weeks between Mullingar General and Crumlin. And at this point, he was in ICU. So we knew there was something seriously wrong. But we were hoping, you know, we were hoping for a viral thing. There were lots of things it could have been. But unfortunately, it was lymphoma. So today, the 4th of September 2018, we received that news.
What was life like before?
Oh, life, as I look back now, was pretty good before. I'd give anything to be back there. I'm just looking at photos as I talk to you. I suppose we were a family of four. Cian was the oldest of two boys. We did everything together. Very, very united, never really apart. When we look back, we did so much together. which is great now when we look back because we've got so many memories of the four of us together. So we were a typical, you know, family of four. The boys were, Cian was very sporty, always on the go. Shane did dancing, you know, so school, extra bits in the evening, weekends away, walking the dog, the simple things, but happy and, you know, not a sign of this to come and devastate us. Cian was healthy, happy, sporty. Everything was normal, if that's the word, until about a month beforehand. So, yeah, it was, life was good, but life changed in an instant.
So only a month of being unwell. What began? How did you go from well to ICU?
So we had had a very difficult year, in that Enda's dad passed away the previous November. My dad passed away in March 18. And, you know, over the summer, I thought that Cian wasn't in great form. Just tired in himself. He had just actually signed for Longford Town Football Club and he was so excited and happy about that, but just seemed to be surfing a little bit with energy levels. So like most parents, what we did was like, oh, you know, it must just be catching up with him. It must just be this. It must just be that. And I remember he was mad to learn how to drive, even though he was only 14. And Enda's dad had this like Jeep and he was learning to drive in the front garden with this Jeep. And so when he complained one night of a pain in his side, like a stitchy feeling, we thought, oh, you know what? It's driving the Jeep around the garden because it must have just, but he must have just pulled something. So I think that was on a Wednesday night. And then on the Saturday night, I was actually going down to spend the night with my mom, keeping in mind that my dad had passed away pretty recently. And I said to Enda, my husband, you know, I'm not happy with this. He's still complaining. I'm going to bring him into my doc, which is our local out of our service. So they weren't sure what it was. They thought it was appendicitis. They thought, you know, the usual things. And then actually they said appendicitis and they said, look, we'll take out his appendix tomorrow. Now, in the background going on, Cian suffered from Crohn's disease and he had it affected one side more than the other. And he was under the care of Crumlin for that anyway. But it really didn't have any impact on his day-to-day life. He was on medication. Everything was fine. So when, you know, they talked about surgery, I said, look, we better run it past Mullingar or Crumlin because, you know, the Crumlin are in charge of his other care. So I remember it was a Saturday night and into Sunday and they were keen to do the surgery and I was keen to talk to Crumlin. So in the end, I just said, look, maybe talk to Crumlin and see. So I'll never forget it. Sunday morning, this consultant came down and I hadn't seen him the night before. And he said, no, I've just been on to Crumlin. We're going to send you up today. And it's another one of those dates that stick in my mind because the day the Pope's visit. So we were all put in an ambulance, but Enda couldn't come follow us because traffic restrictions and all of that. Anyway, we landed in Crumlin and really in Crumlin, he was getting sicker and sicker. They didn't know what it was. And then when he was in ICU, they said they would do a bone marrow aspirate, among other tests. They were doing lots of other tests and other blood tests. And then they did that on the 3rd and then they told us on the 4th. So, yeah, so that's how it went. It went from 0 to 100 like that. Because even in the early days, there was still talk about appendicitis. You know, the early days in Crohn's, there was still talk about appendicitis. There was still talk about a very bad flare-up of Crohn's. It was very, very close to diagnosis where they began to think, oh, hang on, something's not quite right. I do remember actually a consultant coming around and feeling side and saying, I'm just not happy with what I'm feeling there. So then, you know, you could sense a shift, a little bit of worry coming into the room. And they were like, okay, we're going to do the tests anyway. The tests were planned at that point. So look, let's go ahead with the tests. So they went ahead with the tests and that's what confirmed it. So he's 14, but he's way ahead. You know, he's 14 going on 45. You know, he was very much tuned in. So we were told that day. And, you know, immediately it was like, we need to tell Cian. And as a parent, you know, you do anything. You would just do anything not to have to do that. And I still remember them, you know, so they gave us the day to kind of absorb it ourselves, and then said, okay, you know, we need to tell Cian and we need to be honest with him about what it is, because we need to build trust. And I couldn't, you know, I was like, tell a lie if you need to tell a lie, you know, but don't tell him. So they insisted that they tell him, and, you know, you go with the advice, and maybe it was important to have that trust there. So they told him, and oh God, he was so vain. Sinead, the only thing he thought about was, the first question was, will I lose my hair? He had this mop of floppy hair. The style at the time was this big, huge fringe. And when this said, yes, you may lose your hair, you know, very honest, very straight down the line, he starts to cry. And I'll never forget it. It's the worst moment of my life. You know, you just, and I think even then you don't really know the path ahead. You don't. I'm very much the kind of person that when they told me, I probably went very quickly into, okay, that's, what are we doing? Tell me the plan, you know? And so we were in that mode. We're like, okay, you know, we'll fix this. We've got to try and fix this. But he was shocked, and, you know, but then they quickly turned to, we have a plan, and it's what we're going to do. And so he rode with it. He was great. You know, he shed the few tears, and then they moved him. I suppose the thing is, once they diagnosed him, they started treating him properly, as in, you know, they knew what it was, they knew how to deal with it. So I think within 24 hours, he was out of ICU and down on St. John's ward. So there was that, you know, he started feeling better because they were treating the diagnosis at that point. It's such a serious diagnosis, and it's such a serious treatment plan. And while I always shied away from percentages and ratios and rates of survival, you know, I said from the beginning, I don't want to know that. Looking back, I'm not sure they ever gave us much hope. You know, they were very, very, and probably rightly so, very, very clear. This is very rare. We haven't seen it 20 years. We're going to fight it. But there was never, I never felt, of course, there were good news days. It was very much a roller coaster. There was lots of good news days, and I always had hope, but that hope came from within and from just, you know, praying to God that it would just somehow we get that miracle. So then hope for Cian too, because you just have to keep going. As a parent, you cannot, you know, I don't think I shed a tear in his presence, but I shed bucket loads outside of that room. So you've got to get going. Where does it come from? It just comes from having no choice. You get a certain amount from the team, but just with Cian's diagnosis, they were honest, they were straight. They said, we will fight this as best we can. And I didn't want to hear anything other than that. But now when I look back, I think, you know, I can still see the consultant had this habit of putting his palm of his hand out on the table. And I remember you couldn't look him in the eye because you knew, I can't just look him in the eye because I know what he's going to say. And I've just got this vision of this outspread palm on the wooden table. And, you know, they have a tough job, but I can't look back and say, look, they gave us hope. They gave us false hope. They didn't. And we just gathered that ourselves, and we plowed on, and we fought. And Cian fought, and yeah. So I think, are you secure and safe? It's like you enter into another world, and you're supported by other families, and you're supported by other stories, and you're supported by the team. Of course, absolutely. You're depending on them for the whole medical side. On the other side, though, I think you lean a lot on other families, on other charities, on outside. You put your faith in the team to do what they do, and you let them do that. And then I think after that, then you try and get support where you can. And some days you'll feel like a conversation. Some days you won't feel like a conversation. But the good thing, and I shouldn't say that's the wrong word, but the thing about it is everybody up there is in the same position, and it's like an underworld, and nobody, anyone who hasn't been there doesn't understand it. But it's, yeah. So you get through it because you've no choice. So if we go right back to that conversation around the bed in ICU, that when the consultant broke the news to Cian and the team were there, all gathered from the various departments that we would be working with over the next while. I think, you know, and as I said, we were so upset, and he was crying, and, you know, maybe in an attempt to lighten the mood or to just change the subject or for whatever reason, out of the blue, the consultant just said, well, Cian, now might be a good time to ask your mommy and daddy for something that you like. So we're there. He's having been given this devastating news. And I'm thinking, right now, I'd probably sell the house if you want me, you know, to buy a helicopter. We'd probably do that. So there's just an intake of breath, go, what is this going to be? And because Cian was very fond of the good life. I mean, Cian was into fine dining and the brands, and, you know, he was high maintenance kind of guy. So it's like, okay, intake a breath. And he said, I want another dog. I want my own puppy. Like, okay, that's doable. So we had, we have still another dog, Holly, who was kind of the family pet, but his wish at that moment in time, of all the things he could have, it was, I want a dog. So you talk about things that, you know, distract and things that support and things that do it. Like, we spent probably the next couple of weeks, instead of reading sad stories about cancer and looking up statistics, trying to find a dog that would tick the boxes in terms of being old enough, you know, to come to Cian, considering he was on treatment. And what I mean by that is he had to be 12 weeks vaccination Scott, and then so many weeks post-vaccination, and, you know, the breed might be important because Cian had a central line in that stage. So this became the focus, you know, and it was great. Probably, so that was September, early September, as I said. And then we probably spent about 6 weeks trying to find the puppy. And then Cooper arrived in November 18. So
what did Cooper do for the spirits?
Oh, right from the first day, you know, it was funny because we went down to collect him down in somewhere like Mount Melick, or I can't think of the name of the place. And, you know, it was the usual. We met at a football pitch, and, you know, nothing underworld here now. The dog was all registered and everything, but we just picked a place to meet and all that. So, and I remember we opened the booth and there was two dogs, and Cian just looks at me and I was like, no, you are not getting two of them. And he's like, is the other one going to be left on his own? So the owner, thankfully, spoke up and said, no, I'm keeping one. I just want to give you a choice. So, and he also had this, he was such an animal lover. He would pick the one that he think would be less likely to be sold, you know. So now Cooper was perfect in every way, but he was like, you know, mommy, if he's got a leg, something wrong with his leg or something wrong with, I'm going to take one, because I'm going to take the one that nobody else take. And it's very sweet. But anyway, I have a photo of it at the moment when he just picked him up for the first time. So from day one, inseparable. Home here. And at that stage, Cian was well underway on treatment. He hadn't gone back to school, nor did he go back to school after a diagnosis. He couldn't play soccer because he couldn't do any kind of contact sports. He became a little bit withdrawn from his friends because he was so into his appearance. And when he didn't look well, he didn't want anyone around him. And so this bond went from strength to strength. And every day when he was here, it was, I need to walk him, I need to train him. He knew every trick going. Our veterinary director, who's now veterinary director in Cian's Kennels Emma plant, who was Cooper's vet from the beginning, gave him a book about training them and feeding them. And he just became obsessed with, you know, bringing Cooper along and training him and spending time with him. And it gave structure. And then Cooper, like, had got stairs, paddle up in these puppy like steps and into the room to him, and or he'd sneak him into the room, you know. So it just at a time when, you know, it was a sociable child who was, or a young man who was so used to being surrounded by people. And, you know, in a way I was an irritant because I was at him about taking medication. I was at him about how was he feeling. I was taking thermometers in his ears morning, noon and night. And, you know, just to have this, I won't say person, but thing, or, you know, that doesn't judge and that doesn't ask questions and you can just be with, and he gets this lovely response from. So they became inseparable. It was amazing and wonderful for us.
But trips to Crumlin would mean that they would have to separate.
Yes. So what happened was, our trips to Crumlin in the early days tended to be not that long. He might be up in the, most of it was in the day ward. And then we did have quite a few stays in Mullingar, our regional hospital here, which was doing shared care for Cian. Because he always seemed to be, there wasn't really, I can't remember even a 2 week period where we didn't have to go do a hospital visit. But sometimes it would be, you know, they'd go up, check him out, and he'd get back home either that night or in the morning. So it was fine. And, you know, what tended to happen was either End or I would do the hospital trip and the other would stay with Cooper because Cian was coming back down that night. They weren't really separated until June of 2019. So to take you up to that point, what had happened was Cian was on treatment, very much a roller coaster. I mean, great news. They do the bone marrow aspirate every maybe 6 weeks. One week you'd have good news, the next week you'd have great news, the next week you'd have bad news. And they were constantly changing the treatment protocols to try something different. But it was actually at a time when we were really on high that we were thrown back in completely at the deep end. In around March of 2019, Cian was put on immunotherapy treatment and he responded really, really well. To that, his hair grew back and all the tests were looking good. So they started after going through various tests and a lot of you know, second opinions and all that, you know, through the hospital, they said, look, let's proceed to bone marrow transplant, which is what Cian ultimately needed for survival. So we were very excited about this because he was so well. He was looking so well. He was feeling so well. His hospital stays had been reduced. They then notified us that they had found a match and things were on the up. And in the middle of June, literally the day before he was supposed to go up for his like hearing and eyes and teeth and all that tests for the transplant, he just literally had a sore throat and I brought him to Mullingar. And within 24 hours, he was too sick to be transported. He was too sick to be transported to Crumlin. It was an ambulance. It was a consultant. It was hitting the road in spots. I will actually never forget it. I don't know how we got there in one piece. He was just so, so, so ill. And straight back into ICU. And we thought sepsis, we thought viral, we thought everything. Everything and prayed for everything. You know, the things we prayed for, people wouldn't pray for. But it's like, let it be anything. Just don't let it be the lymphoma. But it was. And they sat us down the next day and they said, look, the bone marrow transplant's off the table now. He's sicker than he ever was. And that was the start of a 3 month stay in Crumlin, which was the last 3 months of his life. We never got home. We got home for a day, maybe. But we had a hope. We had hope. You know, they brought in a treatment from the States, which had never been used in Ireland before. And that actually, in a way, really dictated the stay more than him being sick, because it was so new that they really wanted to monitor him every day. And, you know, so he was well, if you know what I mean, but he needed to stay there. So we had a lot of day trips out. We had some trips home. But ultimately, every night he went back in. So that's when the first, I suppose, time from spent away from Cooper kicked in, really, was that summer of 19, when we realised he's going to be here for a while. And again, look, he's going to be here for a while. He's going to get this drug. We're going to get through this. We'll get transplant later. We'll just get him across this bump in the road. Yeah, so we spent from, yeah, it was like, again, events stick in my mind. It was the Pink concert in Dublin, because friends of ours came up to see him and they were on the way to the concert and just couldn't believe how sick he had become. It was really just get the dog, and then the dog, because that's what he wanted. And then when he ended up in hospital in June 19, it was, you know, get the dog to Dublin, because... Oh, we laughed, you know, he took it so seriously, because poor Enda used to have to measure the food out and then send a picture of it to Enda, because he had this thing that Enda was incapable of feeding the dog, like, and Enda's had dogs and his family, you know, all his life. So, and then heartbreakingly, he said, "Daddy, I don't mind what you do, just don't make eye contact with them." You know, he was afraid that Enda would take the bond, you know, that don't make eye contact with him, Daddy, don't make eye contact with him. And you just, your heart break. So we said, we've got to get Cooper to Dublin. And, you know, there's where we lean on other people. You know, we were, how do we do this? How do we get a dog from Longford to Dublin? Where are we going to put him? Can Cian go out and see him? Can he come over here? And that's, you know, we weren't thinking about, clearly at that point, I suppose we were thinking, get through this, keep him happy. He's going to get better. You know, this is just something to, you know, to tide him over and to keep that bond there. So that's what we did. He came from Longford in the back of a taxi organised by Aveen's Pink Tie. Ronald McDonald House came over with water bowls and stuff, and said that he could stay at their back garden, you know, while he was waiting to see Cian at any time. Social workers were on board. I mean, they say it takes an army. Well, it took an army to get him up there, and it was brilliant. And that there's a photo, you know, that I've sent in of that first reunion at the back of St. John's Ward. And it's just like, I love you. No, I love you more, you know, and just it's if you look closely at that photo, it's just the absolute adoration they had for each other. So at that point, it was just this is what we need right now for him and to help him. And but we underestimated how much it would mean. It was a game changer. It just distracted. It gave a plan every day. Like, the consultants would come around, and in the end, they knew, we've got to facilitate his time with the dog. It was just, you know, okay, Cian, so you need to get your bloods done today. So why don't we do that now, and then you can go over to Kennels later. And so he was just signed out, and he'd go over like anyone going on a day trip. And he was quite well most of the time. And then I think definitely once, and maybe twice, we brought Cooper over and just tied him to a fence at the back of the ward there, so that Cian could see him. And actually, like, other children came out then as well. And, you know, we began to see, it stayed in our mind, even though there was no like, oh, this would be great in the future. We weren't at that point. We were very much at the point of, it's great for Cian. And then, you know, you just, I do remember, and even Enda remembers, like, how gentle Cooper was with the other kids, because he was so used to Cian. He used to jump up, because he's like a typical playful puppy, he used to jump up on everybody else, but the children, including Cian, he just kind of shimmy back in like this against them. So he was great with them. And we began to, I suppose that's where the seed was sown for the idea.
Childhood Cancer Ireland brought the Beads of Courage and Sibling Beads programme to Ireland and continue to fund it. Each bead is a meaningful symbol of courage, helping children to understand each milestone of their journey. This international programme has been proven to decrease stress, increase positive coping strategies, and help children find meaning in illness. As any family who has been through childhood cancer knows, it is not just the child themselves who is affected. Siblings struggle to come to terms with the changes in their family. They are concerned for their brother or sister, and they wonder what it all means for them. The Sibling Beads program allows siblings to work through their emotions and fears during difficult times. We are delighted to introduce a pet visit bead. Children miss their pets so much when they spend extended periods of time away from home. The wonderful work of Keane's Kennels reunites children and their beloved pets. And now they will receive a precious bead to mark this important visit. For more information on Beads of Courage, visit our website at childhoodcancer.ie. To help us to continue our services, please text GOLD to 50300 and donate €4, or visit childhoodcancer.ie for more.
There's been wonderful understanding now of the impact of an animal on our health, on our well-being, on our spirit. What did it do for Cian to have him part of his life?
I suppose we talk a lot about normality and bringing normality. And I think, you know, when I look back on our journey, that's what's gone. You know, there's a new normal. There's a new normal for me as a mum. There's a new normal for Enda and Shane. And there's definitely a new normal for Cian. So, and you're in this abnormal, dreadful situation. And anything that you can do to bring that normality, that daily thing, he's just a boy with a dog. He's walking his dog. He's spending time with his dog. He's having fun with his dog. Same as a child who's not unwell. You know, I used to go to Ronald McDonald's house and do the laundry. And I used to think, oh God, what I'd do to be at home on a Saturday morning doing the laundry. Because it's normal. It's normal what you'd be doing on a Saturday. I'd nearly be in tears at the thought of, I just wish I'd be as at home doing laundry. After cursing it for like 15 years. But so, you know, if there's a key word, it's normal. But then on top of that, there's friendship and a bond and fun and distraction and even filling time. Like some of the days on that ward can be long, especially weekends when there's not much happening. You know, so many things that it can do when you're in hospital and everything is that new normal. It's just lovely to have a glimpse of just being a family together with a dog, and just being Cian together with his dog, walking him, feeding him, spending time. And even the photographs and the videos and the laughs that we had with him, they're hard to find when you're on that path, and you know they're precious.
So. It's wonderful to hear you say that the staff in the hospital understood the bond and understood the relationship and understood that Cooper was a part of his therapy.
Yeah, they did. They were very good. Cian had a way in his own quiet way of, not that he was in any way strong about it or verbal about it, but they knew that it meant a lot to him. And I think as well, sometimes I think that they struggle, but it was lovely. It became a conversation topic. So, you know, and we've actually, in Cian's Kennels, we've been thinking about that as well. Cian had a photo of Cooper on his bedside locker. And, you know, a consultant could come in the middle of the night and he could be not know Cian's personality or history, could be just covering for the weekend. And he'd be like, so you playing soccer, or, you know, trying to find a conversation. And but we made it easy because, like, is this your dog? And, you know, yeah, what's his name? How old is he? You know, so they all knew this is important for him. And yes, absolutely, they supported it where they could. I mean, there was days where they were saying, look, no, I don't think he should go today. He's not well. Or, you know, we really need to get this done. So we'll go. He can go in the morning. But they were very accommodating and they did understand. Akeem was there for 3 months. So he became part of the family of the ward, really. And they got to know him and his likes and dislikes. And they knew Cooper was important. And they supported that, yes. Absolutely.
Akeem's fight sadly ended in September of that year.
Yes. September isn't the best month. For us, hence we're usually try and fly somewhere to get away, at least physically, if not mentally, from it. Yeah, in the early hours of September 23rd of September 2019, just over a year from diagnosis, he passed away in St. John's Ward. Peaceful, very, very peaceful in some ways. At the time, I thought sudden, but maybe not so. He sudden as in kind of over a weekend, he got very sick again. And we knew that this time there was no going back. So I am. Early hours, I had spent like 2 days and two nights with him. And then they came in around 5 o'clock in the morning and said, look, he's very low. So I called Enda out of the room just to say, look, we need to call families and stuff. And while I was up putting on the kettle, he decided to head off. So we raced back down to the room and we're just there no more. So he did things his own way, and he loved tea, and he decided he wasn't going to hang around for that last cup. You know, it's still like almost 4 years on. It's just surreal. It's, you relive it every day. And flashbacks of it. And, but it's not so much that, well, it is that, because clearly was a horrific time for us, but it's the future you lose as well. It's the, you know, what would he be like now? I mean, we've had to go through, I dropped Shane to do his junior cert, and I met Kian's classmates going to do their leaving cert. Like I couldn't even, you know, go to work afterwards. You know, it was just like, it's you know, you walk into a shop and they're working behind the counter, and the longer it goes, the harder it is, because you can't visualize what they would be like, you know, when they're 15 and you lose them. And everybody else is 15, then, you know, it's fine. But not that it's fine, but it's easier. And then it's just watching that progression. Kian had fantastic friends and a lovely, lovely group of lads. And they were so, so good to him. And I wish them so well and their families so well. They were so good to us. But I was kind of relieved when that whole leaving cert thing was over, because now I don't know what they're doing, and there's none of these stages of the grad and the grad mass and the leaving cert and the leaving cert results. And now they're pursuing their college things, and you know, Shane's obviously still in the same school, but I just feel it's easier when you're not running into them at every corner and watching how life has moved on as it should. Yeah, it's very much day one. That day, it's day one of it's the end of that journey, but it's day one of a life without him. It's, you know, the loss is just, there's no words. It's like, we're, you know, there was four of us. You take a four-legged table and you take away a leg. You know, we barely stand sometimes, and he was an amazing young man. I'm very proud of him and how he handled everything. And, you know, I think we often say, what would he do if it if it was someone else and not him. And he'd probably say what he used to say on his journey. What can you do about it? But he's taught us a lot. He's taught us live life to the full, live every minute. You know, don't sweat the small stuff. Just keep going, you know. He never stopped. It's like he knew I'm on borrowed time. He was like a Duracell bunny. He never stopped. He never stopped having conversations. He never stopped talking and shopping. He was just like a live wire. And we have to keep going. For Shane's sake, for our own sake, and learn, you know. I do always say, what would he do to still be here? We need to just do that stuff. He passed away and our lives just stopped and started again in yet another new normal. And but it was in my mind, like, we immediately wanted Cooper back from Dublin, and everybody supported us in getting Cooper back. And then Cooper became, this is our job now, you know, to continue what he did. And so I'm not sure, you know, how much there must have been some thought in, because the next kind of important time for us was a friend of ours, or a guy we knew, just called me and said, can I come out and have a chat with you? So we must have, you know, I'm thinking we has obviously had a name and we had an idea, and the word had got out that we are thinking about this. So in March of 2020, so about 6 months after Cain passed away, this gentleman that I spoke of, Brendan Constein, called the house and he said, look, we're going to do a cycle, Mountimism cycle. He had actually sadly lost two siblings himself, one to cancer and one to a heart issue. And quite recently. So, you know, we talked and we cried, and he said, look, I want to do this cycle. And I've heard about Cian's kennels, and his brother was a real dog lover, as is he. And, you know, we love the idea. And I was like, well, you know, Brendan, it's just an idea. We don't have a bank account. We don't. And like, I'm an accountant by profession, so I kind of know what you have to do to be properly registered as a charity. And I was like, God, Brendan, I don't know if we could get all that done. And but yeah, okay, you know, so maybe it was just what we needed, somebody else to kind of go, okay, we need to have it done by that date. So it was set for the 18th of April of 2020, which would have been Cian's 16th birthday. But you're probably you're registering the dates in your head. So what happened was COVID came with a vengeance in March. It wasn't around Paddy's Day, March 2020. So the cycle was cancelled. Everything was put on hold for that summer, really, that whatever period of time that was. And but you know what? A bit like Cian, what can do about it? In hindsight, it was good, because that cycle did go ahead and raise significant funds for us a year or two later, in memory of Donal, of Brendan's siblings. So it was in memory of Donal and Dervla for Cian's kennel. So it did go ahead. It was a huge success. And in that interim period, it gave us time to stand back a little bit, to get our board of directors, to get our charity number, to get our bank account set up, and to do all those things, which we could do quietly in the background, even in COVID restrictions. And then to start having the conversations with the hospital about how we might work it. But in many respects, it was a very simple idea. It was really, I wanted to do what we did for Cian, but based on my experience of being a mum on the ward, I wanted to get rid of anything that might be seen as an obstacle. So I wanted it to be easy to access. So you fill in the form of your phone, sign up your phone, send it in. You know, I knew, like, where do you go to print off a form in the hospital, then scan it back in? So I knew it had to be that easy to access. We wanted it to be free, because there's enough financial strains on families going through that journey. And we wanted it to be safe, secure. You know, I know that feeling, your heart's in your chest pounding. Kian went to the All-Ireland final, you know, 6 days before, or the replay, 6 days before he passed away. I don't know how I got through the day. I was looking around, I could see John's ambulance, people surrounding us at all times. He didn't know that. I knew that. And, you know, so I know that feeling of being anxious. What if he's unwell? What if something happens? What's my, where do I go? So we wanted it to be obviously safe, secure. So that there were the three things. And then apart from that, then it was really simple idea. Just bring the dogs to Dublin, put them in kennels and bring them over to the hospital. But yeah, it did grow legs and tails. And yeah, it happened. And I suppose Kian started it. He started in his quiet way of, you know, he opened up the conversation. He opened up the conversation and he did ask the question, why is nobody else doing this? Why can't anybody else do this? And he'd ask that question and he'd wait for the answer. So, yeah, so he started it. It's very much based on what I felt it gave to him. And it's lovely now because we're at the stage with it where we're seeing that same feedback from other families. Because at the beginning, you're thinking, maybe it's just us. Maybe it was just Kian. Maybe families aren't going to feel like doing this. But now it's so inspiring to see story after story where, you know, it's a similar experience. It's, you know, people use the words, you know, game changer, changed everything, brought fun, brought normality. And, you know, testimonials of the families do show that, yeah, okay, it wasn't just a crazy idea. It is making a difference every day there. So yeah, it's great.
How many families have you helped so far?
So we've been very much on a kind of a phased trajectory basis. So we opened the unit in May, 10th of May, 2022. So we're actually just over a year in operation. And for the first 6 months, we were piloting it, just a pilot only, and with St. John's Ward only. So we had, and then every visit was kind of like a longer thing because it was been piloted. So what I mean is we had to go up there every time. We had to make sure the family's registered, and we kind of almost like a walkthrough thing. And then a little bit before the 6 months were up, the hospital, we spoke to the hospital again. They said, no, let's extend hospital-wide, which we did, I think, around October, November last year. So this is really just this year has been our first kind of spring, summer, and it's been very, very busy. But what you'll sometimes find is because our services are quite varied, so we do the veterinary checks, we do transport, we have a partnership with DSPCA for kennelling, overnight kenneling, and then obviously we have our pet visiting centre at Crumlin. But for example, you could get a child who lives down the road from the facility who's in Crumlin. They mightn't use the transport and they mightn't use the DSPCA because they're down the road, but granddad might bring the dog in. Yeah. So they could come for 5 days in a row. So you could have five visits, one day after the other, dogs coming down for a visit and going back. We also have service of the kenneling, as I mentioned there. And sometimes families will use the kenneling even though the dog's never going to come to the visiting centre. So an example of that would be where the child is newborn or the child's very ill, like an ICU. So we provide that support to families whereby we will kennel the dog at DSPCA to allow them time out of the hospital to go over to DSPCA and bring the dog for a walk. So there you have an example where they might use the transport and they might use pet visiting this facility, but they're still a family with help. So it's very hard to give you a number because it just varies so much. And then we'd have the families that will take everything. But use all the services where we might pick up a dog in Donegal in our van, transport the dog to DSPCA, kennel the dog there. So we're using the DSPCA services and then bring the dog using our van over and back for scheduled visits. So it's quite varied and the families kind of pick and choose which service, or, you know, they would like to use. But yeah.
What has it given to you?
It has given me lots of things. It has, you know, I mentioned how busy life was with Cian and with the family before he got sick. And, you know, I was used to being working full time, running around nonstop. That's just the kind of person I am. And then when Cian passed away, despite the fact that Shane went back to school and was doing his things, I just felt I had this time, you know, on my hands, and I didn't know what to do with it. So it's given me something to do, a distraction. I do, you know, I love to see that we're helping other families because I've been there. I love to hear the stories of the joy and the fun. That gives me hope. Maybe it just gives me I'm proud of it. I'm proud that we can help them. I'm really inspired by their stories, and I'm just delighted to hear that we've had an impact. And I think, you know, it's carried on Cian's name, and that he'll be remembered for his love of life, his simple love that he had for Cooper, and just that the person that he was. And, you know, his name, every time you talk about Cian's kennels, you talk about Cian in a very positive way. So that's why we want everything around the charity to be positive. And, you know, it's important, very important for us that everything is right and positive, and that we're really, really going, you know, as far as we can to help the families. So yeah, they would be the things. It's given me a purpose. And it's bringing me, it's maybe given me the joy that Cooper gave Cian, really. It's just continuing that on.
What do you think Cian would make of it?
Oh, Cian would probably be looking down, criticizing. Ah, no. He'd be proud. Yeah, because everything we do, every decision I make, thinking what would he like this to look like. So you know, he'd probably have a little wry smile and kind of go, "Yeah, God, Mum, can't believe you actually pulled that one off." But he'd be proud. He would,
as he should be.
Yeah.
As I am listening to your story, and all of the families that you have helped because of finding your courage to make this happen are proud of you. To turn your grief into something that has created such comfort and therapy for the children that need it, the families that need it, really is special. It really is. And you should be proud. And I know September is incredibly challenging for you, but this September, I want you to hear that it is incredibly special what you've done, and you should be so proud.
Thank you. And we are. And, you know, I can't finish up without saying that it's not just me. You know, End and I might have had this idea, but we have been absolutely overwhelmed by the support we've had in making this happen. You know, you couldn't do this on your own. We live in Longford, the facilities in Dublin. You know, the board of directors, the people who, you know, have their own skill set that they bring to the table. You know, they help me to do this. They help End it to do this. And then our amazing team of volunteers are, you know, growing on the ground in Dublin. It, you know, I sit in front and I tell the story and I tell how this started, but I can't do this on my own, and I haven't done this on my own. That sometimes is something that just bowls me over. I know why I'm doing this. You know why I'm doing this. Sometimes somebody does something, I'm like, you know, I'm just so overwhelmed by the fact that they are as passionate about this as I am, and they give so much to help us do what we do. And, you know, that's what makes it special, I think, too, because it's so many people.
Yeah, they take that from you. You know, we find courage when we see others living with courage, and they're buying into the vision that you have created. And it is such a brilliant idea. And why have we not been doing it before?
Sometimes I understand that it's the person in the world. It's the person in the world. When I hit a few bumps in the road, I'm like, okay, now I know why this hasn't happened before. But we got there, you know, and it is, you know, I don't want to underestimate the challenges, you know, infection control, trying to set up a center like this where there is no path to follow. You know, really, really working closely with the hospital and, you know, trying to get it that it's right for them and that the patient is at the center of all of this. So that we can provide the fun bit, but we're doing it in a way that is absolutely in line with their protocols. So sometimes we joke, yeah, this is why there's no others in the world, because nobody else did it.
Take it on.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, we're here now and we're looking to the future. We're in very initial discussions with the New Children's Hospital. So we do hope to be there too. We always saw CHI Crumlin has been very much our pilot phase, even though we're out of that now, but it was very much try it out, test it out, get our procedures right, get our team in place. So we were always thinking long-term. I mean, I've always wanted this to be survive long beyond all of us and to be there for the future for the children. And so Cian will never be forgotten. So.
Well, I sincerely hope that is the case. I can see no reason why it shouldn't. I think it's such a wonderful concept. You've done a wonderful job at establishing it. And it will only grow from here, because we now understand that pet bond is therapy. And it is something that a child can have when so much else is taken away.
Yes.
Well done for doing it. And thank you for doing it. And thank you for joining us today so that we all can take some strength and courage from what you've done and bring it to our own lives. And who knows what else can be created from anybody listening to this and inspired by your story.
No, thank you
so much.
Thank you. And it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. It's lovely to talk about him. So thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you for listening to this Gold Ribbon Conversation. There are more Gold Ribbon stories written by those fighting childhood cancer on our website, childhoodcancer.ie, and you'll find a link in our show notes. If you can, we would love you to share this podcast across social media using hashtag Gold Ribbon Conversations, as it can help more families to discover this show. This podcast was produced by The Brand Story for Childhood Cancer Ireland, hosted by Sinead O'Moore, and sound production by Alan Breslin.